together again, you and I, on Tuesday, October 24th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. I kicked off the show with word that an effort is now officially underway to possibly eliminate municipal property taxes on motor vehicles. Greenwich GOP State Senator Ryan Fazio stopped by to talk about that same issue, while Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio was here to talk about an easy way for state residents to follow key bills in the General Assembly and contact their state Senate and or state House members. All right, so if you want to get rid of it, how do you account for $1 billion? If you want to lower taxes by better than $1 billion, not 1 million with an M, 1 billion with a B, right? 1 billion with a B. How do you make up for that? What am I talking about? Well, we are talking about the motor vehicle tax in the state. Now, that's a tax nobody likes paying. I despise that tax. It makes no sense. Not only because you're paying taxes on something that you may have purchased 10, 15, 20 years ago, and the overall value of that may be so low that you say, what's the point? But the tax on a motor vehicle is asinine because it's different in every part of the state. It is. If you want to use that old axiom that real estate people love to use, both commercial and residential, they say location, location, location. And they're right. You take a beautiful house and you drop it in a crime-infested, rat-infested neighborhood of any city in Connecticut, the value is gonna crater. You take that same house and put it in a surrounding suburb, or you drop it in lower Fairfield County, or out east in East Lyme and Old Saybrook and stuff, same house, but magically it's worth more. Why? Because of the location. And that is why the sense of paying property taxes for a home makes sense. There's no other way you can do that. The condo I live in is valued. I pay taxes in Wallingford depending upon what the Wallingford mill rate is. I would pay different taxes if the condo was in Greenwich or Westport or Stamford, you know, probably because of location, location, location. It doesn't work that way with a vehicle. That 2017 Honda Accord or that 2019, Toyota Camry or that 2005, Buick LaCrosse that's barely still running. The car is the same wherever you park it. There's no such thing as location, 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 location for a vehicle unless you do it statewide. So we start with this at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Now, follow along here. If you remember, a couple years ago, the state did something. They set a maximum mill rate. In other words, how many dollars per thousand will you pay in taxes of the value of your car across the state? A lot of cities and towns that are relatively well off have lower mill rates. Some that are not well off because the value of the property is low have higher mill rates. We know that. That's taxes 101. So mill rates have been capped on motor vehicles at 32.46, meaning that the highest you can pay per $1,000 of the assessed value of your vehicle is $32.46. If your town or city is losing money because of that, the state then reimburses them even more. So the bigger towns, the bigger cities that may have more program costs, they get bailed out here. But the reason we're talking about this now is that a task force has just sat down. They had their first meeting on Monday. So a new task force has started work to eliminate the motor vehicle tax in Connecticut. Hallelujah. Guess what? I don't think it's going to happen. It says here in the Connecticut Mirror, and I need ideas from you people as to how to do it. See, I have an idea that nobody's going to like. Well, I have a combo idea. We'll do that in a second. A new panel began Monday on the task of identifying ways to eliminate the motor vehicle property tax in Connecticut. In my mind, the biggest pain in the ass tax that we pay in this state. I got my bill a couple of months ago for my car from my town. I'm not blaming Wallingford. Everybody does it. But I'm like, come on, I'm paying 4 years of taxes on this again? Stop. The task force held its first meeting on Monday. It was created by a bill passed during the legislative session, which charged the panel with coming up with an idea to eliminate the car tax. Senator M.D. Rahman, a Manchester Democrat who co-chairs the group, said, we'll work together to find solutions. Well, you say you'll do that. I don't know what it is. Here's what the bottom line is, and you can call me up with whatever ideas you'd like is to do this. But currently, cities and towns in the state, here's the number. It came from the tax office. Cities and towns across the state collect $1.047 billion on more than 3 million cars and trucks in the state. So before we go along further, let me whip out the calculator here on the old computer here. So let me put this number in. It's 1,047,000,000 on at least 3 million cars and trucks in the state. It's a lot when you think about it. 3 million cars and trucks. So divide that by 3 million, and you know what you get? An average. Now, some are older, some are newer. Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue. $349 a vehicle, right? How do you make up for that money? Now, again, that's at least 3 million vehicles. It's probably more. But you tell me, because I'm with you. You don't have to twist my arm on this thing to say, hey, we got to get rid of this tax. I'm all for it. I know the cities and towns need the money, though. That's the problem. So I'm going to simply ask you, how do you make up for this money? Because it's the cities and the towns that are going to suffer. In other words, if your city and town, if tomorrow everybody came to an agreement, Democrat and Republican in the House and Senate, and they all got together with a big kumbaya moment and some herb tea and biscuits with Governor Lamont, and they said, hey, guess what? Everybody hates this vehicle tax. Consumers hate it. Homeowners hate it. Car owners hate it. Businesses hate it. All right, we're going to get rid of it. Here, snap the finger. It's gone. Now we have a $1,047,000,000 gaping wide hole in the budget. How do you fill that? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. How do you feel that? Yeah, I'm right with you. Now, there are states that do not tax motor vehicles. All right. That'd be nice if that happened. There are states that do what we do here. Tax a motor vehicle depending upon where it's parked or the town it's registered in. Dumb idea. It's been a dumb idea for years. What's a better idea? Now, bear with me on this, and I want you to think about this and you tell me. How about, because again, I don't want to hear anybody call me today saying, yeah, we don't need the tax. No, we need the money. And the motor vehicle taxes, see, the way this is structured is, the motor vehicle taxes are basically collected by your city and your town, and they stay local. They stay in your city or town. Which is why a lot of municipalities hate it even more, not because of the revenue, but because of the manner as to which some of this stuff has to be collected. In other words, you hear a lot of times cities like Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven, they say it's a pain to collect motor vehicle taxes if people won't pay, so they sell off some of that debt to private companies who do it. Better to get something than nothing. All right, but I have an idea as to how to do this. You may not like it, you may love it. Let's just say, to me, you can do this if you do a little from column A, a little from column B, and a little from column C. Now, it sounds a little idealistic, maybe, but you have to do this from a variety of sources. There is simply no way. And I'm telling you that right now because if you call me and say, well, we just will do without the money, you can't. Because I know what you're going to say. Well, fewer state workers or make them DOT guys pay more on their health insurance. Doesn't work that way. Because the money you get from the car tax is funneled straight to your cities and towns. That's why motor vehicle taxes, you don't write out the tax check or however you pay it or do a debit card. That's not sent to the state. You go to, as I do, you go to the tax collector's office in the middle of town, and you pay and pay, and they take that money, and that goes into the town or city budget. But okay, if you folks are like me on a Tuesday, the 24th of October, 2023, and your idea is, how do we get rid of the motor vehicle tax, then just tell me, because it ain't good. Just not to have that tax. You need some sort of a tax there. You do. And I can't help but laugh. What else can you do? Before we get back to eliminating the vehicle tax, word just in that Tom Emmer, who is a moderate, kind of centrist Republican House member, 62 years old from Minnesota, he has dropped out. He's the latest now nominee to drop out of the Speaker's race in the House. So the Republican Party, again showing, and don't get mad at me if you're a conservative or a Republican. Don't scream and yell at me. Don't call me a rhino. Don't call me names. Well, if you can, if you want to, you can call up at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And I will firmly allow you your time, and then I'll tell you, as I can go on for days here, why and how the National Republican Party is teetering. It's already comedy. And you want to win an election next November? Are you serious? You think you're going to win an election? And I don't know why this is the, if this is the reason he dropped out here. But again, they're saying that, former President Trump called him a rhino. Man, I gotta, this is just mind numbing. It's showing that the National Republican Party can't govern. The party is being held hostage in the House and by default in the Senate by about 10 or 15 hardliners. And these are the first people that are going to cry and bitch and whine and moan when, you know, Joe Biden's reelected next year. The Democrats, you hear that sound? Listen, hold on, listen. You hear that? Hear that? It's the sound of Democrats high-fiving each other again in Washington because the elected Republicans in D.C. are firmly ensconced in yet another clown car. All right. I believe the Republicans here in Connecticut are a bit more coordinated than that. In fact, I know they are. This gentleman joins us, State Senator Ryan Fazio, Republican Greenwich, this afternoon to talk about this whole thing about how do we do this? How do we eliminate the car, the vehicle taxes? Hey, Ryan, it's Paul here. How are you, sir? Good afternoon.
I'm great, Paul, and I can report I'm very coordinated. I can walk and chew gum at the same time, so I'm super coordinated.
You would be an anachronism if you were in the House right now in D.C., Ryan. You know, maybe someday you'll get there. Now is I don't want to see you up there now because it's just you talk about circular firing squad. But let's talk about this, Ryan. I don't know of anybody, Ryan, who says, "Wow, I can't wait to pay my vehicle tax. I can't wait to pay a tax every year on a vehicle that I bought 10 or 12 years ago that's barely running." Okay, we all want to get rid of that, right? But you're a dollar and cents guy. Excellent article today in the Connecticut News Junkie pointing out, Ryan, that over 3 million vehicles here in the state account for $1.047 billion in taxes, and those taxes are paid right at city and town hall, and they go to the municipalities for their costs. So how do we do this, Ryan? There's this blue ribbon panel that's meeting. It's got to deliver a report by February. How is this even possible? Where are we going to get that money from?
Yeah, so for your listeners, there is a task force that was created by a state law that we passed last year that is going to discuss and study the possibility and the alternatives to reduce or eliminate the state's vehicle property tax. On its face, I think that's actually a very noble concept mm-hmm. because most states don't have a vehicle property, a car property tax. And we know Connecticut's overall tax burden and property tax burden in particular is so badly onerous, and it's regressive. It hurts middle class and working class people, people on fixed incomes like seniors, most of all. Now, what my concern is that the task force might be oriented to shifting that tax burden mm-hmm. from one asset or one income stream to another. So instead of taxing your car at, you know, 20 mils, they're just going to take your real estate and go from 20 mils to 22 mils. And so net-net, you're not paying any less. And that's not actually what people want. People are upset about the car tax. If their taxes were low in every other department in Connecticut, people wouldn't complain about the car tax. People are upset about the car taxes because everything that moves in Connecticut is getting taxed. Mm-hmm. Literally everything that moves in Connecticut is getting taxed. So we need to look at ways in which we could reduce the overall level of property taxation. And that means removing many of the mandates and the liabilities that the state forces on our towns and cities. That's the only way to actually reduce car taxes and all property taxes in the long run.
Yeah. And Ryan, I've been looking at this subject and I lived in a couple of areas for a short time. And you mentioned, you know, a lot of people don't realize that a lot of states don't do this. What about the notion, and I'm sure you may have seen or heard about this at the General Assembly and all the discussions you've had, for not a tax per se on automobiles, but maybe a universal flat fee that at least would pay part of it, and you're paying that same fee whether you're in Greenwich or Bridgeport or New Haven or Meriden or Middletown? Could you account for it in some way that, okay, people would still have to pay something, but it would be far less than they're paying now?
Yeah, I think the problem with that is, again, if you need to collect the same amount of revenue or more revenue, mm-hmm. someone's going to be, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. I mean, Paul's getting robbed in the first place. So my idea is just you got to rob people. You got to rob Paul and Peter less cumulatively. And I think if you make it a flat across all towns and cities, you're actually encouraging the bad behavior in towns and cities that led to many of those towns and cities having such high property taxes in the first place. If you make all the revenue and taxation go directly to the state and back to the towns and cities, you're going to encourage bad, wasteful, profligate behavior on the local level all across our state. And then because of that, you're going to see everyone cumulatively will probably see, I think, their personal income taxes, their sales taxes, and their property taxes in the aggregate go up. I think we need to make sure that, you know, your policymakers, both on the local and state level, are held responsible for their decisions, whether they're good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we reduce the aggregate burden all in on the average middle-class family who's paying too much in car taxes, real estate taxes, income taxes, and everything.
And, you know, when I look, Ryan, and the guest of State Senator Ryan Fazio, when I look at the list, which people can easily find, of states that do and do not tax motor vehicles, it's not all red and it's not all blue and it's not just in one section of the country and not in another. This really is one of those problems, Ryan, one of those fees where you look at it and you say, huh, how come we do it and they don't? It's a vexing thing when you look at it.
Yeah, and that's what the task force should look at. I mean, again, I bet there are states, I think it's probably a more inefficient form of taxation. It's an open question whether if you shifted the taxation from cars to other things that don't move, it would be a more efficient way of taxing things. So I think the task force should be looking at the other examples around the country. Again, I think to some extent they're offended, like, yeah, why am I paying a car tax when most states do that? But I think they're especially offended that it's on top of everything else that's so unreasonably expensive and taxes that are so unreasonably high in Connecticut writ large. So you're absolutely right. We should look at what other states are doing. Some are probably doing it and should, you know, for bad reasons or silly reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But many of them probably don't have the overall tax burden that we do. So ours is really adding, I think, more insult to injury than most other states.
All right. Ryan Fazio. Ryan, thanks. Be in touch, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right. And he is right there. That, again, like I said before, if you suddenly say, well, we're going to stop, well, we want to get rid of this $1 billion worth, $1,047 million worth of car taxes and vehicle taxes, well, it's got to come from somewhere, right? I guess. I don't know. All right, next half hour, we'll get back to some open phones if you like to chime in with all that and more at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Got some breaking national stuff of note. We'll get to that momentarily. But every day, right around this time, every rather Tuesday at this time, we check in with blogger Megan Portfolio, blogger reporter extraordinaire at the Yankee Institute for Public Policy, yankeeinstitute.org. And Megan's here to keep us up to date on a few things. Good afternoon, Megan. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm doing well.
Well, that's good. Listen, a couple of things I know you wanted to talk about today, and I'm glad you mentioned this because I didn't know this existed, and it's really cool. Now, at the Yankee Institute site, yankeeinstitute.org, you have a take action page. It's yankeeinstitute.org/take-action/. What's that all about, and why should people go there?
Oh, well, we started this during this legislative session, and it's just an easy way for people to you tell the computer where you live and whatever issue you're interested in for or against. You put in your address. It tells you exactly who your lawmaker is, and we have a pre-filled out form, and you literally all you have to do is just sign your name, and a message gets emailed directly to your lawmaker. It makes it super easy. I know it gets intimidating contacting lawmakers on the phone. You can just sit at your computer, go to yankeeinstitute.org, click on the take action button, and whatever issue you're interested in, click away. we just put a new thing on there. It's called Don't CA RCT, mm-hmm. and it's about the gas car ban.
Okay.
And we basically have till November 28th to let our lawmakers know that, well, I'm assuming everyone's against it, but that's just me. But if you are against it, you can go in there, just put in your address. There's a lot of information on there if you're not sure of the issue. All the information's there, and it's literally like two clicks, and a message gets sent.
Well, that's great, because, you know, I talk about it all the time here, Megan, about people being respectful and calling their legislator's office and finding certain bills. But even with the access to what certain bills are doing the last time they were in committee, I mean, you know, I've been doing this sort of show for 30 years, and sometimes it's even daunting for me, and I'm sitting here for half an hour going, no, that's not the bill. No, I know it came out of committee. So this is pretty cool. This should help people a lot, I think, anyway.
Oh, I think so. And we're just, it's going to be active, you know, for the rest of, you know, Yankee Institute's life, which will probably, unfortunately, be forever, because our government needs a watchdog.
Well, that's good. Listen, we want you to stay there forever.
Yeah, so they could do that. And I just, I know really quick, a lot of people say, oh, my voice doesn't matter, they don't care. That is not true. They do care. If they want to get reelected, and if they have an inbox flooded with, you know, requests on what action to take, they listen. Like, we killed tolls and we beat TCI because the people did that. They contacted the lawmakers, and they get scared and they don't want to lose their jobs.
And you and I have seen this over the years, Megan, and the guest is Megan Portfolio, of course, from the Yankee Institute. You know, Connecticut's a small, it's a big small state, or a small big state. You know, how many legislative races do we see, Megan, that are decided one way or the other by a couple of hundred votes, 250 votes? It's not like members, Megan, outside the cities especially, win their races by thousands of votes. They don't. Sometimes these races are 100 votes, 150 votes, and you're right, they do. They have to pay attention when people can find this stuff. You know, it's not 1970 anymore. This stuff, thanks to the internet, is easy to find. And you're right, I think they are paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, there was a race in Southington, you know, last cycle. The gentleman won his state rep seat by one vote.
That's amazing.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So, and again, shows every vote counts. So that's issue one tonight, yankeeinstitute.org/take-action/. And also, I wanted to touch on this because I did see this earlier in the week. You folks at Yankee are following the story of the saga of a church that wants to feed the hungry, but there's a problem with that. Give us the details on that.
Oh, yeah. When I saw this, it drove me nuts. This is just another example of how government literally cannot solve any of our problems. Mm-hmm. So there's a church in Hartford. They've been operating a food pantry for about half a decade, and they have a kitchen. The kitchen's already there, and they've been seeing a rise in homelessness. There's a tent city up the street from them, and just more and more people are needing this resource. So they decided to ask for a variance on their zoning to be able to open up a food pantry, a food kitchen, rather, a soup kitchen. And they were denied. So they literally would have, like, solved a little bit of the problem of the homelessness and, you know, hungry people, those are less fortunate, and not cost the taxpayer a penny. But they were denied. And I found it very interesting because I had seen an article a few years ago on social media where a church out in Oregon had a similar issue. They mm-hmm. were feeding the hungry multiple times a week, especially through COVID. All the churches in the area shut down. They stayed open. And a few people in the neighborhood decided they didn't like it anymore. They felt that crime was going up. They didn't like the vagrancy. So they appealed to the zoning board, and the church went from being allowed to serve meals 6 days a week to being allowed to do it 2 days a week. So now they're suing because it's a clear, like, violation of their First Amendment rights. I mean, their mission is to, their church,
yeah.
their mission is to help individuals and families, and the government's preventing them from doing that.
And is that, Megan, is this in Hartford? Is it the state? Is it the city of Hartford? Who's
Yeah, it's the city of Hartford. It's the Faith Temple Assemblies of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
there was one woman, and she was so awesome. Because I love when the people fight back against the government. And she, like, lambasted the committee. She's like, if you're going to say no, like, why are you even here? Like, we're literally trying to, like, not cost taxpayers any money, help people, and you're not allowing it to do it. Like, why are you even here? I was like, yes, you go, girl.
All right, check out that story. And once again, check out everything, including that bill tracker. Easily, you can get your inputs set to your state House member, state Senate member. Find that at the Take Action site at YankeeInstitute.org. Megan Portfolio joins us every Tuesday at this time. Hey, Megan, thanks. We appreciate it. Have a good week.
You too.
All right, thanks. There you go. There's Megan from the Yankee Institute. All right. How about this? A few minutes, we'll check national news. We'll have open phones the rest of the way. Do you remember I kept mentioning a name to you during the whole Trump thing, right? You know, the stolen election thing. And I kept saying, and, you know, we talked about this a couple last week when, what's her name? Sidney Powell, the attorney, flipped. Another attorney flipped on Trump today, Jenna Ellis. But ABC News, remember when I mentioned to you the name Mark Meadows? Remember that? Mark Meadows was former President Trump's final chief of staff. And I kept telling you, Meadows is going to flip. And he flipped. Former President Trump's final chief of staff in the White House, Mark Meadows, has spoken with special counsel Jack Smith's team at least three times this year, including once before a federal grand jury, which came only after Smith granted Meadows immunity to testify under oath. This is from ABC News, and it's being talked about everywhere now. The sources say that Mark Meadows informed Jack Smith's team that he Now, listen to this, folks. And I know people are going to hear this, and you're not going to change your thinking. And I remember reading this a couple of years ago. This was mentioned in a couple of places, and nobody picked up on this. Because you're continuing to buy the election was stolen thing without anybody stepping forward with credible evidence. You don't have any credible attorneys or witnesses like we had in Watergate to admit to this. Sources say Meadows informed Jack Smith's team that he repeatedly told Donald Trump in the weeks after the 2020 election that the allegations of significant voting fraud coming to them were baseless. Do you hear me? They were baseless. This is the same thing that Bill Barr has been saying. According to the sources, Meadows also told the federal investigators Donald Trump was being dishonest with the public when he first claimed to have won the election only hours after the polls closed on November 3rd, 2020, before the final results were in. A source quoted Meadows as telling Smith's team in hindsight, quote, obviously, we didn't win. Trump has called Meadows, one of the former president's closest and highest-ranking aides in the White House, a special friend, a great chief of staff, and as good as it gets. So they got along. The descriptions of what Mark Meadows allegedly told investigators shed further light on the evidence that Smith's team has amassed as it prosecutes Trump for allegedly trying to unlawfully retain power and spread lies about the 2020 election. The descriptions also expose how far Trump loyalists like Meadows have gone to support and defend the president. Sources tell ABC that Jack Smith's investigators were interested in questioning Meadows about election-related conversations he had with Mr. Trump during his final months in office and whether Meadows actually believed some of the claims he included in a book he published after Trump left office, a book that promised, quote, to correct the record on Trump. ABC News has identified several assertions in the book that appear to be contradicted by what Meadows allegedly told investigators behind closed doors. So he says one thing in the book, and then when the federales come to town, when the federales come in riding on their horses, they say, well, okay, Mark, what's the real story here? Give us names and dates and times. But the former president is still, at least at this point, the top Republican among support. We live in wondrous times, don't we? And we can't elect a speaker. And the Republicans can't elect a speaker. This is like... And the hold on, listen again. Before we go to traffic and weather together, listen. You hear that? You can hear that, right? You hear that? Those are Democrats high-fiving each other.